John Williams here, and Terry Savage is too. Welcome back, Terry. How are you?
Good to be with you. After the holiday, back to work.
Terry's the nationally syndicated financial columnist you read all across this great land, and of course online at terrysavage.com. Terry, I saw a list about the best and worst states for retirement. Can we start there today?
Sure. I sent that over to Pete Zimmerman, our wonderful producer, because it triggered a column that I'm in the middle of writing right now. And of course, you'll always look and see where Illinois is. And
38.
But that's sad.
Well, but you know, here's the categories in which this particular list from Bankrate, the categories are affordability, wellness, culture, weather, and crime. And we know about crime in Chicago. We can't fix the weather, but it doesn't talk about taxes, maybe affordability.
Well, affordability includes that. And by the way, the biggest weighting in this index is affordability. And a good part of that is related to taxes. So far, Illinois does not tax retirement benefits,
yeah.
But that may change.
Yeah.
But even otherwise, Illinois, in terms of affordability, is not very high on the rankings, and that's a big part of it.
Maybe not surprisingly.
Illinois was 38th overall, and 34th in affordability. Our crime, we were 25th. I guess who is at the top of the crime ratings? I think it was Louisiana was up there. Alaska, believe it or not, and Louisiana, highest in crime.
Wow, who would have thought Alaska? Overall, Georgia is the best state to retire in, Florida, Tennessee, Missouri, Massachusetts, Wyoming, Arizona. Indiana is number 9, Wisconsin 14, best states to retire in, Michigan is 17, Iowa 36, and Illinois 38. Well, at least Minnesota's 49. Minnesota's a lovely state.
I know it is, but they have high taxes and horrible weather. And by the way, number one state being Georgia, so I had to look. Georgia, in terms of culture, I didn't make this up. Georgia ranks 41st in terms of culture. I mean, maybe outside of Atlanta, there's no culture in Georgia. Don't yell at me. That's the survey. And 32nd in wellness and 29th in crime in Georgia. But affordability, affordability counts a lot in this survey. And it ranks number 3 in affordability and number 4 in weather. And by the way, Florida's weather ranks 14. So go figure.
What do you say then? What are you writing about relative to all this?
You know, I'm writing about the divide. I'm going to guess that most of the people who are tuned in, listening to you all morning and all day, and listening in particular to the Wintrust Business Lunch, are people who have the luxury of making choices. And it's really important to consider all kinds of things in your choices, whether it's affordability is really important, and weather, I think, comes up high, only it's only 16% of this survey. But there are a lot of people out there who may not be tuned into our show who are just working until they can't work anymore. I remember that half of all seniors, Social Security provides at least 50% of their income. And for almost 30%, they live on Social Security 90% of income. And so it's interesting that when I talk about retirement planning or write columns about that and give advice on, you know, where to get advice and how to plan to make your money last as long as you do, my favorite term, it applies to our listeners, I'm sure, but it applies also to a relatively and growingly less swath of Americans, because there are many people who think of retirement as just, I mean, you're going to work until you just physically can't work anymore. And it's different times. You know, it was in the olden days, I started out, in the olden days, mm-hmm. retirement was the 3 or 4 years between a lifetime of work and death. Now we live longer, and we have to think about the people who are really not able to retire and then not able to work anymore or find work at all now, before they ever thought they'd retire.
You said, I'm going to make sure I got this right, that 30% of senior citizens, for 30% of them,
almost 30%,
90% of their income is Social Security.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they didn't work in high-paying jobs, so they're not getting $2,500 a month or more. They're getting, you know, maybe $1,500, $1,600, $1,800 a month. And a lot of them, of course, retired early, so they're on the lower end of those checks anyway.
Boy, that makes you want to heed your advice and delay Social Security as long as you can, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that's it. I talk to the people who can make choices, trying to help them make good choices. But we must remember, we live amidst people who have no choices. That's really important.
Okay, 312-981-7200. That's Terry Savage. She'll answer your questions. You've got comments, too. Is it taxes? Is it unemployment benefits? Is it stimulus? Is it some other financial question? Here's your chance, 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls right now. Okay, Terry Savage, lots of calls for you again today and text messages. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
And you asked Terry if you have to file an amended Illinois tax form because of the unemployment benefits on the federal side.
No. If you filed and paid taxes on the first $10,200 worth of benefits, you will get an automatic refund.
Fair enough. This is William. You're on WGN Radio with Terry Savage. Hi, William.
Good afternoon. Terry, I've heard very concrete evidence that the Social Security benefits might be reduced by 30% by 2030. So is there a benefit to waiting?
No, don't sweat it. First of all, by that time, the number of people on Social Security in America will be a huge and growing constituency, and I very strongly doubt that Congress will do anything, aside from creating inflation, to reduce the benefits. Actuarially speaking, there will probably be a moment where, if you're very wealthy, you will find higher taxes on Social Security benefits. They'll try to do something, but I don't think that for ordinary people, they're going to be able to reduce the benefits. I mean, we have problem. They'll probably raise taxes on workers, and if you, in addition to your Social Security check, which for people who worked a long time by then could be over $3,000 a month, they may say that if you have more than X amount in addition to that, we're going to reduce your benefits, but not for the people who are living on it and depending on it.
So you're thinking that the current recipients wouldn't get, like, reduced?
No, I don't think the benefits will be reduced. I think they'll apply some kind of tax on it, a surtax, if in fact, you know, if you have other income. If they deem, you know,
right.
I don't care how much other income you have, if you paid into it all your life, you deserve the benefits you were promised. But at that point, when actuarially speaking, it's, quote, running out of money, and running out of money means there won't be enough younger people working to keep paying out at this level. They'll figure something out. Look what they've just done, you know?
Yeah.
They'll print the money.
Thanks for the phone call. Good question, William. We'll go from you to Ken. You're on WGN. Ken, how can we help you?
Good afternoon, John. Terry, I value your opinion very much. And what I'd like to ask you is, what is your professional and personal opinion regarding telling people that they are in your will or trust?
Huh. That's a really interesting question, Ken. First of all,
sounds like a loaded question.
I do value my opinion. You know, free advice is worth exactly what you pay for it. But that's a stall while I think about this.
Well, hold on a second. Before, as you cogitate on that, Ken, why do you care?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know.
Well, because I have people in my will and trust, and I'm not sure if it's a good idea to let them know or not.
And maybe don't let them know the terms of it, like who gets what or how much, and that's your decision, not theirs.
You know, you don't want to have to tell someone who will put a banana peel under your front door.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think this is a profound question. We could sit around for an hour over coffee or a glass of wine and discuss. I think if it's your children, you need to be fair to them. You don't want them sitting around wondering if your grandchildren are going to get enough money to go to college. So you might say to them, I've set up a 529 plan. Here's what's in it. And this should cover your kids or part of your kids' tuition. I think you need to let them
know that. Terry. I don't have children. I do not have children.
Oh, this is really interesting. Do you have a trustee? Have you put everything in a revocable living trust?
Yes. With executors,
With executors, what you really need is a successor trustee. And have you given that trustee instructions about who's to get what?
That's my fiance, yes.
Okay. If you should have a co-trustee besides your fiance, It should be the attorney who grew up
here. I do, and there's a chance that they're losing their memory from what I've heard, so it's very dicey about all this.
Yes, this is, it is particularly difficult for people who are single or alone. And this is a private conversation. I'd have to give some serious thought to that. My first thought is you need someone else you trust, and there are trustees. But the most difficult estate question, and I have many, particularly women friends, who are older and who are alone, and who to trust not only with the estate distribution, because when you're gone, but who to give a health care power of attorney to and so forth, are really tough questions. I'm not going to give you a flip answer.
You know, I let me also just offer this, and it may be helpful to you. Carrie Peck at Peck Ritchie, the law firm, specializes in elder law. This is the very thing this guy lives for. He actually helped write the laws in Illinois. PeckRitchie.com is also a good resource for you, Ken. And thanks for the call. You've got all of us kind of thinking about that now.
Yeah, I heartily endorse your suggestion of Carrie Peck. He did write the book on this. But you still need to find. This is the most difficult question and one you should not avoid while you're healthy and thinking like Ken was. Who is going to handle this? It's not just if I'm alone, where does it go, this charity or that, or will they, you know, I don't. But the real question is your health care power of attorney and other issues that have to be decided.
And, you know, my parents, my dad is proud of the nest egg that he's been able to acquire. He and my mom are older now, of course, and they still live at home and they still have expenses. I don't know if there's going to be any money left when my mom and dad pass, but I know my dad wants us to have a quote-unquote inheritance, such as it will be. And we have not talked about, will it be equitably divided among the four children? How much will we expect? You know, things like that. And my attitude is, it's none of my damn business. I've told him that before. I said, that's your money, Dad. You do with it whatever you and mom want, and I don't have any right to it. I don't even think I have a right to know.
John, but what you need to do is make sure that there's a plan. So, number one, everybody, this is free. I don't keep track. Go to terrysavage.com. And on the top right, one of those little blue boxes, print out, or you can do it, fill it out online. I don't see it. The personal financial organizer form.
Mm-hmm.
Give it to your family at the holiday. Give it, print out as many copies as you want. Where is my safe deposit box? Where is my estate plan?
Who's my
estate?
That's a good idea.
What's the phone number?
Yeah.
You can print that out as a couple of pages. Where are my accounts? So you don't put that in the safe deposit box because no one knows where the key to the box is. So you put all that in a safe place at home, number one. Number two, just search revocable living trust under my columns, terrysavage.com, and understand the difference between the will and the trust. Do that, and your parents should do that. You don't need to know exactly what, but you need to know that they've got it organized.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your life will be a disaster if something happens to one or both of them.
1227. Okay, lots of specific questions from Terry for Terry. About the stimulus and about taxes and about, we'll get to it all in just a minute. Terry Savage joins us on Wednesdays. One more segment, Terry. You ready for more phone calls?
Yeah, someone sent me an email saying, don't talk so much, get more questions. Let's do it quickly.
Let's talk to Sue then. You're on WGN. Sue, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Terry, my mom received an IRS form in the mail, 6330C. And it indicated that they received an income tax return using her name and Social Security number, and they need to verify her identity before processing the return. She's tried calling the number that they provide, it's an 800 number, and she's done this for about a month and a half and has not been able to get through. Nobody answers. It just says, we're busy, call back later.
Did she file a tax return this year?
She did.
Is she required to?
She did.
She did file it.
Yeah.
Oh, so that literally it could be hers. They
it
are doing
be.
That because did she has she filed in previous years at the same address?
Yes.
Okay. Numerous people have had that problem. Try to remember what the IRS said to me. There is, in fact, let me just think of where it is. I'll post that on my blog at terrysavage.com. I have a phone number, and I'm just going to see if I can find it right now. Stick with me. Where would that be? IRS update. I think that's where it would be. Post it on my blog, and I will put up the phone number again where you can call, okay?
Okay.
Because there is absolutely a number you can call. And it's happening to a lot of people, and you can't get through, but there's another way to deal with it. I can't quite remember it at the moment, to tell you the truth. But I'll answer that promptly. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
So, TerrySavage.com, you will find the answer there soon. Let's talk to Dale. You're on WGN. Dale, what can we do for you?
Yes, I never got my $1,400 stimulus, but neither my wife or I got it. We had the first two, but not the third one.
Okay, some of those are still coming out, but you can go to irs.gov and look on where's my stimulus check, okay? And you will be able to find out if it's on the way, if it's been sent, and you haven't received it yet. Then you need to file a lost stimulus. But I just want to assure you that you will absolutely look on my website. There's a link. Go to terrysavage.com, and the second column down says IRS update. And when you get there, you'll see what to do if you haven't received your stimulus check. But I want to assure you that if you don't get it next year, I know you don't want to wait, but in April when you file your tax return next year, you will be able to get your stimulus check as a credit, a refundable credit.
Dale, I hope that helps. Good luck. Terry, do you put in your Social Security number or something? I mean, do they literally tell you where your stimulus check
absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely. You can search for your stimulus check at the IRS, not the Where's My Refund, but the stimulus check link, and it's in that article called IRS Update. I'm not in front of a computer right now, so I'm having trouble remembering exactly what it is. But go to terrysavage.com. On the left, the second column down is IRS update. I'm looking at it on my phone right now, so let me see.
Wow, that's impressive. How about this one? Question for Ms. Savage. Any idea when the IRS will refund money due to reporting unemployment benefits before the change in the law?
They say they're doing it now. That's all I can tell you. But they, and some people, some of our listeners have received. Remember, you reported before they decided the first $10,200 of unemployment benefits would not be taxable. So you filed your taxes, considered that as income, which it is, and paid taxes on that first $10,200. You don't have to do anything. They're scanning through all those returns and will send you a refund on the taxes you paid. But any idea of when? No. Someday.
847 says, since houses are getting to be so overpriced, is it smarter to wait for a year or so before buying?
This is a tough one. I think some of the things that are going into housing prices, like it's a pandemic, let's get out of town and buy a house. It's the pandemic and now we have a lot of money because we didn't spend our money on anything else, let's buy a house. It's a pandemic and the price of lumber has pushed the cost of new houses up and builders are, you know, pricing them out of the range of first-time home buyers. I think that will abate. But as I said on these radio shows 10 years ago in 2008, try not to get foreclosed, to not get out of the housing market, because it'll be tough to get back in. And I did believe a decade ago that home prices would be climbing again just when everybody said, I'll never buy a house again, it was a stupid investment. I do believe home prices will continue to move higher, but I think they're due for a little bit of a back off. And I don't know what'll cause that. I just don't know. Maybe the Fed raises rates so the mortgage becomes more expensive and slows housing. Or maybe we have some other reason for an economic slowdown. So I would not chase prices right now. I try never to chase prices in the stock market or any other market. I'd wait.
You'd wait?
I'd wait. If you're in a very overpriced
money
area.
Is so cheap, you know, you feel like...
That's the problem. That's the problem. Right now, today... Unexpectedly, John, and really unexpected to me and a lot of people, the 10-year Treasury note, which was yielding 1.6%, you know, it's set at auction every week by the global players, is now down to close to 1.3%, which means for sure you're going to see mortgage rates now under 3% again for 30-year mortgages. And that's going to be something that's going to last you your whole lifetime. So maybe it's worth paying a little more for a house.
Yeah.
Just because you can lock in the financing, that's really a tough point to make that decision.
It's one you got to make on your own, but there's the numbers. Thank you, Terry Savage. TerrySavage.com for those of you that need to do some follow-up or reach out to Terry, TerrySavage.com. And you and I will visit again on Wednesday.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, John.
That's Terry Savage, as always, our Wednesday guest. TerrySavage.com. 1244. Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The insurance company for Willis Tower is suing the city of Chicago. When 8 inches of rain fell in May of last year, the lower levels of the tower were inundated by water from the Chicago River. Total damage topped $100 million. The insurer says the city and the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District are partially liable because they waited too long to open the locks to let floodwaters flow into Lake Michigan. The lawsuit seeks more than $14 million. In flood damage. Blackstone has agreed to acquire Chicago tech firm Sphera for $1.4 billion. Sphera makes environmental, social, and governance performance and risk management software. The company has more than 3,000 customers in more than 100 countries. Watch out, Cameo. TikTok is reportedly testing a Cameo-like feature that lets users request video shoutouts from creators. BuzzFeed reports TikTok's feature is called Shoutouts and will allow users to request a video using the same in-app currency that can be used to tip creators during live videos. The feature is currently being tested in select markets. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's your business of food report, Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Here we go. Let's begin with a little music to set the mood.
Love is in the air.
Well, it isn't love, really, but John Paul Young didn't have a song that said corn pollination is in the air. But that's where we are. The corn silking process is moving into high gear across the cornfields of the Midwest.
As of the 4th of July, we see 10% of the U.S. crop silking on that date. That is behind the five-year average of 14%.
That's Brad Rippey, a meteorologist with the USDA, who keeps tabs on corn pollination and how the new crop is progressing. And for a quick primer on how corn reproduces, the plants can self-pollinate. No bees are necessary. You can think of the tassel as the male and the silk as the female, and gravity and the breeze take care of the rest. Illinois is one of the leaders in the Midwest when it comes to pollination, but even it is behind the average.
In Illinois, 14% silking. Five-year average is 22%.
There is still plenty of time to catch up. Corn is extremely sensitive to stress during this period of time, and stress is usually weather-related, either not enough rain or too much, and right now there's some of both across the Midwest.
No real good news for the Dakotas, which lead the nation in very poor-to-poor ratings. Also into the double digits for very poor-to-poor ratings for Minnesota, and for the second week in a row, Missouri on the list at 10%. Although the problem there is more wetness than it is drought.
And right now across the Midwest, rains seem to be coming at just the right time for most of the Corn Belt to be beneficial to pollination. Traders at the Chicago Board of Trade keep an ear on things that Brad and other experts have to say about the overall condition of the crops and the silking progress. And right now, corn is down about 1%, 6 cents lower at 533.5 a bushel. Beans had a weaker than expected showing in the crop condition report. Beans are up about 25 cents. And wheat right now is up about a penny. From the farm to your belly, today's National Macaroni Day and National Strawberry Sunday Day. That's the business of food and corn sex on 720 WGN.
Here to help Chicago small businesses get back to business. Helen and Mike Cameron could probably use that. I don't know. They're the owners of Uncommon Ground. It's a small business, but it's got a big footprint in the Lakeview neighborhood. Uncommon Ground is their website, and they've been 30 years in the business now this week, I guess, huh? They're both on a phone line. Helen and Mike, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having us. I was listening to your commercial. I'm like, hey, I'm going to have to try that breezy.
Well, that's a good that's a good sign. Tell us about your business. Mike, you go first. What's Uncommon Ground?
Well, Uncommon Ground's a neighborhood restaurant in the Lakeview Wrigleyville neighborhood. We opened July 1st, 1991. Sort of a community gathering center. We have live music 7 nights a week, or we did. We're about to start that again. We've got brass brunch, lunch, and dinner every day. We're an art gallery. You know, it's just kind of a good community gathering place for the Lakeview neighborhood.
And it wins awards, Helen. It's noted as a green or sustainable place. What does that mean? We're not picking up Helen there. I'm not sure what line she's on. Mike, why don't you try that, and we'll come back to Helen in a minute. Mike, what's the answer to that question?
Well, we're a pretty sustainable restaurant. We try to source everything as close to home as we possibly can, so using a lot of our local farmers and purveyors. We try not to import anything that we don't really necessarily need to. We have the first certified organic rooftop farm in the United States on our Edgewater location, and we have the first certified organic brewery in the state of Illinois at our location.
What's on the menu? What are you guys known for?
Well, we're American comfort cuisine. I'd say, you know, Helen's grilled chicken sandwich, obviously of the namesake of Helen, is something that we've had to have on the menu for 30 years. I think there would be a small riot in our neighborhood if we took that off. We've got things like bacon wrap, meatloaf, and superfood Caesar salad that's a vegan dish. We do a lot of like natural and organic, vegetarian, vegan, but we also have items for the meat eaters as well.
And you got a flank steak, I know. The chopped salad you have, I've probably ordered 73 times.
thank you very much.
And
for that.
It never disappoints. It's really, I suppose, too, consistency, like anybody in the restaurant business, regardless of the kind of restaurant, consistency is key, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, at both locations, we work with both sets of chefs. We talk about, you know, okay, if somebody is at Lakeview, it's got to be just as good at Edgewater, or vice versa. You know, if they're at Edgewater, it's got to be just as good at Lakeview. And, you know, especially obviously the items that we sell between both locations that are exactly the same, they've got to be exactly the same.
You guys were pretty forward with the outdoor dining in tents through the winter and early spring anyway, and then they're still out there. What changed? What did you guys learn, or how did your business pivot during the pandemic, and how is it different now as a result?
Well, I'd say how we changed is, thank God we got started seeing.
Man, they're just having trouble with that line, aren't they? Hold on a second. We'll try and reconnect with you, and if not, we're going to finish this conversation on another day. We're visiting with the folks from Uncommon Ground. The restaurant is celebrating its 30th anniversary in July as a brand and as a fixture in the Lakeview Edgewater neighborhoods. I live around there, and so this is the walkable restaurant for us. They have America's first certified rooftop farm. They have the first certified organic brewery in Illinois, and it's a restaurant that just really has an interesting niche in the neighborhood because they also have music there. He described it as a gallery place, and when you go there still, you'll see the, it's just off of Clark. You can turn left. I think the street's Grace, and you'll find there a long row of tents, which worked for them in the early spring in the cold weather. They're nice. It's a nice sort of green, shady area as well. Before or after a Cubs game, it's a place to stop that isn't just one of the typical bars along Wrigley Field. And for 30 years plus now, they've been doing it. And this is the kind of business, too, by the way, that really had to stand on its own. There was some PPP, but there was also dipping into the family's savings. There was, how do we keep this business alive and keep it local when the pandemic hit? And now we're out, and this isn't a commercial for them. I'm just telling you my experience. I would say it's our favorite restaurant in that area. And so now with 45 seconds left, I think we've reconnected with them. So, Michael, that's my take on it.
Thanks for that plug. That was very, very appreciative. And really, I have to be honest with you. You know, my wife and I had a panic attack and thought, are we going to survive? Oh, my God, we're going to be 30 years old July 1st. Are we going to make it? And I have to tell you, it's because of our community. It's because of our local Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. It's because of our local aldermen. And more importantly, it's because of all of the people in the neighborhood that came out through thick and thin and warm weather or cold, really supported us at a level. And that's truly the only reason why we're still there, is because we had so much support from our local community. So thank you, Chicago.
Yeah, it's nice to hear you say that. Try that salad with the salmon, too. Frankly, pretty much everything on the menu I'm going to personally endorse. Continued success, Helen and Mike. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, our pleasure. Thanks for having us. Here's to, well, hopefully at least another 20. I don't know if I'll make it another 30.
Well, let's not do 2020 again, no matter what. Uncommonground.com. Visit uncommonground.com. Two locations, 30 years in the business. Thumbs up.